on 1116 SEN. Welcome to The First Serve. Talking tennis for AFT Hire. For all your temporary fencing and portable toilet hire, call 1300 946 660 or log on to afthire.com.au.
10 minutes after 11, it's our post-Wimbledon show. We're looking ahead to a big Davis Cup campaign for Australia. They're in a nice steamy Darwin at the moment, about to take on Kazakhstan in the next couple of days. There is a stack of tennis to talk. Brett Phillips tonight. I cannot do this show without my right-hand man. He is a coach extraordinaire, loves his tennis as much as anyone. Paul Aiken, great to see you, Paulie.
Good evening, BP, and good evening to the listeners. Well, 9 Grand Slam titles,
yes,
at the age of 28.
Not bad.
And Serena steamrolls the field again.
Yep. 21 at the age of 33.
Yeah.
That's bad either.
That's not bad, is it? Well, yeah, Novak with 9. The question that I ask you is, can he catch Rafa on 14?
Certainly. He certainly can catch Rafa on the Nadal. I reckon, just before we get to John Millman, who's standing by for us in Darwin, Roger probably can't win another one. I don't think he can win another one.
Yeah, I'd draw swords with you.
Okay.
I reckon he can.
All right. There's the uncertainty of Nadal and what he's going to do. So Novak's at the peak of his powers, and Andy Murray can't beat Novak. And Andy deserves probably a few more titles, but he runs into Novak. He's lost the last 7. So the men's game is fascinating.
Mm-hmm.
But let's come back to discussing Wimbledon a little bit later on the show. But the two number ones get the job done, and a little nice jig at the Wimbledon dinner they had in their best suits a couple of days ago. But from an Australian point of view, exciting weekend coming up, because we are a chance to get into the semi-finals of the Davis Cup. And Thanasi Kokkinakis, along with Nick Kyrgios, Sam Groth and Leighton Hewitt, will be leading the Australian charge. And also part of the Australian team's build-up is a man who has cracked the top 100 for the first time. We are delighted about that. He's a favourite of ours. He qualified for Wimbledon for the first time recently, won a first-round match, was up to his eyeballs in his second-round match against Marcos Baghdatis. He's been at the team dinner tonight. He's been good enough to join us ahead of what is a big Davis Cup weekend. Johnny Millman, welcome.
Good evening, Johnny.
G'day, guys. Thanks for having me.
Great to have you on. You've just stepped out of the team dinner tonight. It's always a regular thing, a couple of days out from a Davis Cup tie. Tell us what happens that the two camps get together.
Yeah, it was quite a big function here. There were a lot of people that had come up for it, over 100 people, and the setting was fantastic at the Sky City Casino here and outside on the beach. It was quite beautiful. So it's just, yeah, the official dinner, they exchange gifts, and the captains, they introduce the teams, and it was nice to be a part of.
Before we look back, and Paul's come later with a few questions, what's it like for you just to be part of the Davis Cup team this week? You got up there, I think, fairly early. I know Sam Groth has been up there for quite a few days, and then the rest of the camp came. What's it been like just to be part of an Australian Davis Cup setup? And I suppose one day, John, if you keep your form going the way it is, you might just be in that Davis Cup team.
Yeah, and that's the dream, isn't it? To be playing for your country and just to be up here with the boys who are representing their country, it's a great feeling. Tennis is such an individual sport, and when you get to play as a team, it's something special. So the boys are looking really good, as you say. They've had a fair few days in preparation, and all of us have come off pretty good grass court swings. So like I said, the boys are going in confident, but obviously the Kazakhstan team deserve to be here. So it's going to be an exciting tie, and there's going to be some great tennis, and hopefully some entertainment in front of the Northern Territory crowd.
Johnny, congratulations on Wimbledon, Davis Cup, and now cracking the top 100. You've been there a couple of days, mate, in Darwin. Take us through a typical day of Davis Cup training.
Yeah, it's thank you very much, first and foremost. But
no worries.
Here in Darwin, it's we haven't got too many courts. Obviously, there's just the one practice court for each country, and then we get allocated times to hit on the match court. But that's extremely limited, especially with the grass too. They don't want to chop it up too much before the tie actually starts. So it's probably not the workloads that probably not massive workloads, but when we get hitting, it's very specific, and and Leighton actually sets an incredibly high benchmark. So we're starting to taper now, but we definitely put some hours in on court. And it's great to be here amongst the best of the Australians just to see what the best in the business do.
Fantastic match against Bagdatis made a couple of weeks ago. What do you think went wrong for you when you were two sets up and a break?
Yeah, I mean, Bagdatis is experienced and he's a champion. And
he is.
I don't think there was a whole lot in it. I think
fantastic.
For those people who were there watching, I think every point was hard fought and he got the rub of the green, especially in the fifth. I thought I was maybe a slight bit unlucky to get broken there, and that's tennis, you know. He's a champion and he drew, I think, upon every little bit of experience he had to get me. But you know, I won four matches to get there, and it was still, you know, I can hold my head up high. I left it all out on court, hopefully I win that one in the future,
mate. Just you know, watching that first week at Wimbledon, the weather was absolutely outstanding. Having been there, one thing that amazed me, John, is all the outside courts absolutely packed. They're 10 deep trying to get in to all the outside courts. You qualify, you beat Tommy Robredo in the first round. A great scalp. He's been a consistent player for a long time. I must say, I was edge of your seat stuff watching the Bagdatis match. But just the thrill of playing at the grandest of tennis tournaments. Can you take us inside that and just the buzz you got out of it?
Yeah, for me, it was really special. It's the first time I've actually even been inside the grounds. Obviously, as you boys know, Wimbledon qualifying is played off-site, so it's been a battle for me just to get on-site. But I managed to get through qualifying and you know, got the folks on the plane straight away. And
yep.
It was just a really good tournament for me to be able to share with my parents too. It's really hard to describe just how special a place Wimbledon is. You can feel the history of the hallowed turf there, and it's really, it's indescribable. It's just such a special place to ply your trade, and I'm grateful I had that experience, but it's also, you know, spurred me on, and you know, I want to keep having those types of experiences. So hopefully, like, I can build on my best ranking so far and put myself into a position where I don't have to qualify for these tournaments and play these ones week in, week out. But it was a really special place, like you touched on. There's tickets are at a premium there. I got one ground pass. I tried to buy some and they told me I had to join the queue to get them.
No.
So, yeah, it was, they're tough work. The All England Tennis Club,
yes.
But I think everyone wants a piece of the action when you're playing at Wimbledon. So it was something that I'm never going to forget, but hopefully I can have more experiences at that club in the future.
Mate, the last 5 months of the year in 2014 were just amazing for you. And watching you in Traralgon, just watching you, I really thought that you were going to break into the top 100 probably a little bit sooner than what you have.
Mm.
What went wrong in the early part of this year? Were you injured or...?
Yeah, well, it was just a bit stop-starty for me. It wasn't any significant little injuries, but I've had to be patched up with a couple of cortisone shots it hasn't been as easy. And also, with tennis too, if you just get some slight things go against you, you can really feel it. I think I lost a couple of matches there where the draws maybe weren't the kindest. I think I had three weeks in a row in tournaments where I thought suited the way I played. I played the guy who made the final, and then I played the guy who made the semi, and then I played the guy who won it first round. So I met a couple of guys who were in big form, and that complemented with just, a couple of minor injuries. You have to be really good to perform at this top level. And at some stages I wasn't quite there, but, I definitely feel as if when I am healthy and when I am playing confident, I can reach a pretty high level. And these types of events like Davis Cup kind of really reiterate that and really help you out too, because you definitely learn with your peers here And yeah, it's still a bit of a learning experience for me.
John Millman, our special guest here on the First Serve. He's live in Darwin helping our Australian Davis Cup team prepare for their big quarterfinal tie against Kazakhstan on Friday, which will be live on 7-2, so free-to-air coverage, which is going to be great right across the weekend. John, just your game, I mean, to get to 98, I imagine just from a psychological point of view, to get inside triple figures with the ranking has just boosted the confidence enormously. When you look at your game, and we've always thought from the outside that, gee, you've got the game that can go high, but are you looking at it and looking to tweak anything at the moment or looking to add things that haven't been part of your game, or you're pretty happy with the foundations that you've got and now it's a matter of just trying to stay fit and healthy and just keep that consistency?
Yeah, definitely. I think, obviously that's one of the big things I have to keep on top of, the work I do off the court to prevent any type of injuries on the court. But I think there's always areas that you can improve, and that's something that I'm always looking at. If I didn't have any more areas to improve and I was 98 in the world, then I'd probably be a little bit upset, because it would mean that, you know, I've kind of plateaued and there's nowhere else to go. So there's always areas to improve, and there's always little tactical changes that I'm trying to make that I feel as if can benefit me in the long run. And hopefully, you know, I'm picking the right areas to work on. And if that's the case, hopefully that helps me out to push up to the next level. You know, it'd be great to push on to a top 50 berth. You've got to keep on... Yep. Dreaming big and thinking big, and that's exactly what I've got to do now.
Mate, what have you learned about yourself in the last 12 months, number one, and what do you have to bring that a coach can't give you?
You know, I'm incredibly proud of what I've managed to achieve in the last 12 months. You know, 12 months ago, to this date, I wasn't sure if I was going to be able to come back and compete at a half-decent level. I hadn't played a proper tournament fully, and the shoulder still probably wasn't quite right. So when you look back at the scheme of things, yes, there probably have been a couple of little times where I haven't probably competed, well, haven't played to the best of my ability, but... In the course of it, over the last 12 months, I think it's been hugely successful from where I've come from. Obviously, coaches and getting the support really does help. But at the end of the day, you are in control of, you know, of your ship, and you are in control of your game. And I like to try and really really work on the things I can control out there. And that means competing to the best of my ability, and that means to go on the court and every session give it 110%. And I know that sounds probably extremely cliche, especially...
No, we see that, you know, so with your game, it's great to watch.
In a sports world. But, you know, even this week, I can really understand the career that Leighton's had, and I can see why, because... you know, he's someone that I've always looked up to, and it's just reiterated that this week. Every session he comes on, and from the very first ball he is switched on, and he is giving it 110%.
Amazing intensity.
And it's something that I can even strive towards. I thought I did it bloody well, but probably Leighton takes it to the next level.
He does.
So. Yeah, no, it's really incredible, and it's been really one of those things I've really kind of taken away from these last few days, and it's something that, you know, I'm going to keep in the memory bank and try to emulate.
Well, John, just one last one, just sort of a follow-up from that. I mean, Pat Rafter has come out this week, and it's made back page headlines about the philosophy of Tennis Australia and just, you know, athletes coming through the system about opportunity versus entitlement. I mean, you've done it the harder way, and we've talked about you a lot on this show, and we've spoken to Sam Groth a lot. You know, James Duckworth has really worked his absolute backside off to get inside the top 100. There's a lot of good stories. JP Smith's emerging. What are your thoughts on what Pat Rafter had to say about just, you know, the way, the structure of Australian tennis and the philosophy behind it, if you like?
Yeah, you know, I think that Australian tennis is heading in the right direction, and I think the culture is getting stronger and stronger, and I think you see that with you know, I think at Wimbledon, I think it was the most amount of numbers we've had in a main draw in 20 years. So I really do feel as if we're heading in the right direction. And sometimes guys are going to make mistakes, and that happens. You know, everyone's humans, and everyone makes mistakes, and I'm fully aware of that, and I've made plenty in my time. So I think on the whole, though, the culture is really coming together in Australian tennis, and all you have to do is see that at this Davis Cup tie, that the culture is strong, and hopefully it can just keep getting stronger. And I think that's what, you know, Tennis Australia is all about right now, and have guys pushing on each other. And I think the more you see that, the better the results, and the more players we'll see, you know, in the top 100 and pushing for these Davis Cup spots and playing main draws of slams.
Well said, mate. Enjoy the next few days. What a great experience to be part of Australia's Davis Cup squad. Good luck for the back end of the year, and looking forward to seeing that ranking continuing to come down. Always great to catch up, and we'll do it again sometime in the future.
Thanks very much, boys. Have a good night.
John Millman, terrific guy. And he is inside the top 100 for the very first time at 98 in the world, and that is a really good story.
In a time not so long ago, he would be pushing for single selection, so that just gives you an idea of how well we're going at the moment.
Indeed, Paul. Tomic at 25, Kyrgios at 41, Groth at 68, Kokkinakis at 69, Duckworth at 84, and now Millman at 98. Maybe a few others can join him. On the way to the break, g'day Flipper. Well, Jason Richardson's the only man that calls me Flipper, so Nick at Noble Park, you're number two. Do you reckon Serena will win the US Open? I'll just give you this as we head to the break. Serena Williams is that far in front, Paul. 13,161 rankings points. Next.
That's insane.
Maria Sharapova, 6,490. Nick, she's just got to turn up. She's actually gone to Sweden. We're going to talk about this after the break. Normally, she wouldn't play anything after Wimbledon. She's playing in Sweden at the Swedish Open. I've got no idea why, but what an absolute treat for the Swedes see the world number one.
I'd be going to the Bahamas for 3 or 4 weeks at this point.
Well, she's had no practice because she was tweeting yesterday on the beach in Sweden and straight to her first round match. We'll take a break. 26 past 11, the first serve. We'll get into our Wimbledon wrap coming up next.
Ever since we started working, obviously, it took some time for us to understand each other. And he's somebody that, yes. He's German, I'm Serbian, so there's a significant difference there. But we managed to find the right chemistry, and you know, he has contributed a lot. This is his trophy equally as mine, and the entire team, and my wife, beautiful wife, my family here. Thank you all for supporting me. I love you. Thank you.
Yes, Novak Djokovic, he is the world number one. He is the man who is dominating, apart from one little slip-up at the French Open. He is dominating 2015. We'll come back and look at the Davis Cup ties a little bit later on, but we do want to wrap up Wimbledon and get Paul's thoughts on the two finals and some of the highlights of the last fortnight. We'll give you some of the rankings movers as a result of the championships. But Novak Djokovic, just give us your quick pen pick of that final, which I've got to say that second set was pretty gripping, and that English crowd who were wheeling Roger Federer on. They wanted Roger. 95% partisan crowd, clearly, in Roger Federer's corner. He turned it on to win that second set tiebreaker. But you just felt, Paul, that Novak was, in the end, probably just going to have his measure because he doesn't make any errors. And he had to go for a lot of different things, didn't he, Federer, just to try and somehow counteract Novak Djokovic. But you sense after losing the French, he was on a mission.
Yeah, he was. And, look, I think the match itself, the first set was where it was lost, in my view, for Federer. He came out, I reckon, smoking.
Yep.
He got that break, but he gave it back, unfortunately. And there was one point in that first tie break that we saw that Djokovic ran down a backhand and hit it for a winner past Federer. And I reckon that just changed the whole flow of the match. Of course, Federer had the two set points as well.
Yep.
Djokovic, wasn't much you could do with those, though, because Djokovic came out with the big serves. But if you look at it, Federer's break point conversion was awful, 1-7. And unforced errors, 35-16.
Yep.
So, and that could be what you're saying. He was actually trying to do something, and that's part of it. I think that's the roll of the dice. But look,
This was always the debate going in, wasn't it, Paul? That many thought that if he was just going to try and go toe to toe on the baseline, he couldn't beat
Djokovic.
Well, he
can't go backhand to backhand. That's like he gets destroyed.
Exactly. And then there were times throughout the match where he was criticised for coming in a little bit too much, particularly on the back of his second serve. But then there are other times people want him to come in more to try and force the Djokovic era. So I'm sure when he's going through the match, he's in this sort of catch-22, trying to go with his instincts, trying to play the really good shot to get Djokovic out of the picture. But just so hard, because Novak off both wings has just got this unbelievable capability of getting a great shot back.
Yeah, yeah. He just turns defence into attack.
Yep.
And look, I think I would have liked him to have seen him chip the ball down the line to Djokovic. So I think that's the one area where he's a little bit vulnerable, is the change of pace when he has to move forward.
Mm.
But having said that, life, just like tennis, is about moments. Yeah. And he just... unfortunately, didn't take those moments. But we're talking about a match that was just so close and such a high standard. There was nothing in it.
And you think some of those errors, it was sort of the ball, you know, just not quite, you know, sort of clipping the top of the tape and staying on his side. So he's not missing by much, but he's just up against a guy who's at the peak of his powers. But this is the question going forward. So at Novak at 28, in superb physical condition, is going to be around the mark. So he's going to be he's the man to catch right now. Roger has still got the desire to play, and he clearly wants to do everything in his power, not just to make up the numbers, but to win another major. Most are saying he can't. There's the uncertainty of Nadal and whether he's going to be a factor at all. We just don't know. And Andy Murray can't get past Djokovic. That's the little monkey on his back. And in another era, Andy might have already had 5 or 6 majors under his belt. And then the rest of the field, who knows? I mean, they just don't stand up when it counts. Apart from Wawrinka, who's won a couple, but you couldn't back in Stan from probably one Grand Slam to the next because consistency hasn't always been his forte.
Well, it was a pretty unlucky match against Gasquet, having said that. But look, I've made a couple of little notes about this, and I think Rafa is gone. I'm on that bandwagon. I don't think he'll win another major. Murray, still a force, thereabouts. Wawrinka, I think, is the heir apparent who could be the number one, because he can clearly handle Djokovic like he did at the French. And I think it would have been very interesting had he have beaten Gasquet and had to play Djokovic in the semi. I think we found out that Kevin Anderson is just a hell of a player on grass, leading Djokovic 2-0 and having some chances.
Mm.
Our boys, our three boys, I think they're still a fair way off, winning a Grand Slam, unfortunately.
Mm.
And I think the sprint is on for the next wave of young players, and I will put our guys in that. Kyrgios, Zverev, Kokkinakis, Tomic perhaps, and then Haitan Chung, maybe.
Yep.
And another kid called Rublev from Russia. Like they're the future. But I'm not seeing anyone who's able to step up into that number one position, apart from who's already there.
Yeah, so Novak on 9 in a hurry can certainly get pretty close to Nadal. I mean, I'd love to get people's thoughts out there. 0433981116 on the SMS, because Charlotte James has gone with the same view. She used to be the co-host of this show. We can't find her for about 3 months.
I've jumped on Charlotte's bandwagon there, because I doubted what she said at first. But yeah, Rafa is definitely playing a level below what he was.
I wonder what's going to happen there with Nadal. We've been speculating for a few weeks. You know, is it going to be Uncle Tony in his camp for the rest of his career? Or is Nadal going to say, I need a change, I need to freshen up, if I am going to get back to challenging these guys? I mean, we see coaches and players freshening up and changing all the time. Going to be fascinating. In terms of some of the rankings movers, well, Gasquet went up 7 spots to 13. Had a really good tournament, Gasquet. I must say, I thought he took a couple of little steps. I know he's 29, so it's getting harder. Burdich is around the same age. You know, to get that one breakthrough, but I reckon he showed a bit more mental resolve than I've seen in the past.
Well, we are seeing guys play their better tennis now in their late 20s, without doubt. So, and even Wawrinka at the age of, what is he? Is he 30?
He's 30, yep.
Yeah, so,
yep.
You know, he seems to me like young, because he's only just starting to play this level.
Mm. Grigor Dimitrov, well, he's gone down 5 spots to 16. So he's got some work to do to try and get back, because he was being talked about as the next potential big star on the rise. So he's stagnated, but we see this with players at different stages. Needs a new coach. Roger Rashid's moved on. Vasek Pospisil, one of the big movers, pretty good tournament, went up 27 spots to 29, and not a bad player. So right now, though, Novak Djokovic, like Serena Williams, there's just the pattern there. They are the two best players by a fair way.
Well, I think the big four is now, you know, Djokovic, Federer, Murray and Wawrinka. That's That's, to me, what's been the change. And the other guys, I think, are going to chip and change around.
Yep.
But essentially, those guys are a level above everyone else.
Yep.
And if we looked at Nishikori being part of that at five in the world, I don't think his game's big enough.
And just a bit injury-prone too. Nishikori gets quite a few niggles.
And that's where it's exciting for us with those young players, but they're still a work in progress.
Yep.
Like, we have to be fair dinkum. They're not there yet.
Yep.
We can't expect Nick Kyrgios to win the Australian Open at the end of the year.
No.
I'm sorry. It's not going to happen.
Exactly right. I've got to be realist sometimes in this game.
And they're great, but things take time.
The women, give us your thoughts on the final. Serena, obviously, in the end, got the job done, as she so often does. She just gives her opponent a little look. It's almost like she teases her opponent. So she throws in about seven or eight double faults. Looks a bit wobbly, and the crowd's willing on the underdog because they want the underdog to get up. Garbine, I thought, handled herself pretty well. She's going to be a good player. I thought people went a little bit overboard in the analysis of Muguruza, thinking that she might one day possibly dominate women's tennis or be world number one, win majors. I reckon she's a fair player, but... not a player that I'm seeing is going to go on and maybe dominate women's tennis.
She's got some holes in her game there.
Yeah, but your quick thoughts on the final?
Look, it was a good final. In the first set was certainly entertaining. She got out, she came out strong. She got first strike. She challenged Serena's movement early, but we always knew that Serena was going to get first strike at some stage.
Yeah,
and that was the problem for Muguruza. She was really snookered by that because her movement isn't so great once she was put on the run, Unfortunately, that's what happened. But, you know, she's got a good backhand, Muguruza. Reasonable forehand, reasonable serve.
What do you call it? Muguruza.
Is that?
Well, I thought you were ordering a mug. I thought you were ordering a pizza.
At this hour of the night, mate, I could be ordering anything. But, no, she was good. I mean, the interesting one for me is Sharapova. And went over her press conference, and she just feels like, you know, every time she plays Serena, Serena just goes to another level, and she'd be better off being like a... Yeah.
There's no player that Serena enjoys beating more than Maria Sharapova.
Yeah, and she says the same thing about Azarenka. So
no chance.
Yeah,
long way behind. 7,000 ranking points behind. Can you think of a female player? I know we think about the current.
Almost a first.
When you go back to Navratilova, but she had Chris Evert as her really close rival. You know, Steffi Graf was sort of out on their own.
Sales a little bit for a while as well, wasn't she?
Yeah, but this would have to be the most... Is this the most dominant?
I think so, and I'll put it to you. Do you think there is any way in the world she'll lose the US Open?
Only if she's not mentally there, but...
I think injury.
She's back home in front of that US crowd, strong crowd. I mean, she'll... Look, if she stays fit and healthy and she's in the right frame of mind, because there is the possibility that she can be knocked out second round, third round occasionally... she goes on to win the US Open. She wants to be the best player in the world, and that means passing Margaret Court. So she'll get there. There's no doubt about it, she'll get there, Serena Williams. I mean, when you're serving the amount of aces you are and you've got that brute power, no female player right now can match her at all.
And she's just a little bit vulnerable in the first week where she just hasn't quite got her game together.
Yep.
But then history will tell you once she gets into the second week, Close the gate, and players just have to play out of their skin to beat her.
Absolutely. No, she is dominant at the moment. Sharapova, Radvanska went from 13 to 7, had a decent tournament. Muguruza gets into the top 10. We'll see how she develops for the remainder of the year. Sam Stosur stays at 23, had a good win in Sweden overnight. Delacroix, 61 to 53 in the rankings, winning around there, and got us over at 61 there, the girls, and how they stack up. We're going to take a break. We'll come back and take a look at the Hall of Fame championships, Paul. The Hall of Fame.
Our very
not
own...
the Hall of Shame championships.
Well, Mark Philippoussis had a game this week there.
We'll get on to that next. Who made that error at Tennis Australia? How do you write Hall of Shame? Conspiracy theorists.
Bigger than a typo.
18 to midnight.
The moment is still setting in a little bit, and I'm just really excited about it because I didn't want to talk about the Serena Slam, and I honestly wouldn't have thought last year after winning the US Open I would win the Serena Slam at all.
Serena Williams, she is the queen of Wimbledon. She's been on the beach in Sweden for a day, Paul, and she's just played her first round match at the Swedish Open in Bastad, 6-2, 6-1. I'm not even going to pronounce her opponent. Belgian qualifier. That's as far as I'm going tonight. But Serena has got through. But Sam Stosur, who won her first round match, has gone down in the last hour or so to Lara Arubarina of Spain, 7-6-6 love. So there's the roller coaster that continues for Samantha Stosur. They're also playing at the Bucharest Open this week. But the Hall of Fame Tennis Championships, our man JP Smith saluting. What a great win for JP over Bernard Tomic.
Oh, it certainly was. And it's probably been a little bit overdue, his form, really. He had two sets to love and I think a break at Wimbledon over DeSchepper and lost in five. So I think he's just, as you rightly put it, finding his way. But, yeah, disappointing that one for Bernie after the furore of the last couple of weeks.
Yes, probably not in the best of best frame of mind. But well done to JP. He's got to take on Jared Donaldson. Now, that match is going to start in about an hour or two over there in Newport in the United States. He's the American.
You'd think he'd get through that one, though. Mm. That's a good draw.
Yep, and then possible quarterfinal matchup with big Stevie J from the United States.
Now that would be good. Two college boys, bang.
But what about the scud came back this week? Now, tell us how he went.
Well, I believe he lost first round in the quali. Surprise.
Big name opponent?
No. Okay. I think it was an American college player.
Rightio.
Anyway, look, Quigley, I think his name was. But Quigley. Anyway, look, it's a bizarre decision to give someone who's that old and not serious about their tennis a wild card. But I guess he can draw a crowd and he's a previous winner.
Yeah. Need a little bit of extra money, perhaps. The scud, I'm not sure. But he just got bored.
We do love the scud stories.
Hmm. He was great. I spoke to him on SCN last summer. He was quite refreshing to talk to. And
He was a family man. You would have watched it, BP. The Age of Love or something he was in. That was some
The series. Age of Love.
I believe so, yeah, like a reality TV show.
No, I don't.
A couple of years ago.
Don't watch those sort of shows, Paul. Big John Isner got upset this week, the top seed. Rajiv Ram won that one, 6-7, 6-3, 7-6. But JP's still alive. That is good news. Jason Kubler, the man who just flies under the radar, our clay court specialist. He's over in Poland at the moment. He won his first round match overnight, which is fantastic. Let's get back to the Davis Cup. Let's have a quick listen to Wally Masua, the captain, who will be on the sidelines with our Australian players regarding the story of the moment, really, Nick Kyrgios. Wally Masua, just connect with the outside studio. Thank you very much.
Nick a liability for Davis Cup? Absolutely not. He's here. He's got the green and gold on. He's one hell of a tennis player. No, that doesn't make him a liability for the Davis Cup. It actually makes him a spearhead for the Davis Cup.
I'm glad Wally switched on. Come on, Rod. Now, it's a big tie. You've been doing some homework on the Kazakhstan
team. I have,
mate. Mikhail Kukushkin, who's coached by his wife. He's not a bad. He's ranked better than Sam Groth and Thanasi Kokkinakis, so we need to take this man seriously.
Yeah, he's the spearhead.
Yep.
Beat Del Potro here earlier in the year. I think he made the quarters of the Sydney International.
Mm. He's had some good results across his career.
He has. 15-9 overall in Davis Cup.
Yep.
In some ways, I've looked at the whole team, and I think Andrei Gublev is possibly their danger man. He beat Wawrinka in a tie last year.
He did, in the World Group. Yep.
Yeah, and would you believe he and, I'm struggling with this name, BP. But
Alexander Nedyasev.
Nedyasev. Mm. They beat, would you believe, Federer and Wawrinka in the dubs as
Indeed.
Well.
Yep.
So, and he, Nedyasev, he is the swingman. He could play singles or doubles.
Yep.
And loves moving forward, probably. He's going to be more suited to the grass, I believe. Very confident with his body language.
Mm.
And he beat your man, Fagini, in Italy.
Fabio.
Yes.
Fagini, yeah. Well, Fabio didn't turn up that day. He only turns up one in four, Fabio.
He's got some style, though.
When he's keen. Mm. So the Kazakhstan team, they've been quarterfinalists the last 3 years in Davis Cup. So we need to be switched on
from the
start.
For the AFL lovers out there, I would describe them as the North Melbourne. They're very reliable, very solid.
Mm.
But I can't see them beating us on grass, and I'm a little bit probably overconfident, but I reckon we could almost play our B team, and that's nothing against them.
Wow.
But it's just that how well our men are going at the moment.
Yep. Well, I hope this doesn't filter up to the Australian camps. We don't want them getting complacent. They won't be listening tonight.
Yeah, that's right. I'm pretty sure that I'm confident.
So Nick Kyrgios, let's put him in the singles. He's going to play singles. Is it Kokkinakis or is it Groth?
Well, that's the interesting thing for me, and I'd love to be there tomorrow and watching the practice sets because I think you'd find they'd be very emotional. And I'm not sure whether Masua has decided the team, or whether he's told them, yes, I'm going to play you, or what's going on. But, you know, Davis Cup ties of old were renowned. The practice sets leading up to the first Friday.
Hot being competition.
Fiery.
Yep.
And I reckon Grothy would be a small chance to get a singles berth.
Yep.
Because who would know? He could be beating those two guys in practice sets on a fast grass court right now.
Yeah, absolutely.
But,
we'll wait and see. But look, we're in the box seat, you would think. Now, the winner takes on either France or Great Britain. Explain to me what happens from here, because we want a tie on Australian soil, hopefully, in the semi-finals.
Well, we will get one if it's France, who we've got to play. But I'm just not sure about Great Britain. I didn't go into that. I've got a feeling we might have played them in the 90s here, perhaps. Might have been Jeremy Bates. And
Jeremy Bates.
I'm going back, mate. But
it was
Pat Cash,
a flashback.
Because I just can't remember. I think it was in that era. So okay. I believe we'd then play them over there if we won. But definitely France here.
Well, Great Britain take on France. That's the other quarterfinal. Andy Murray, James Ward will be leading the singles charge. Jamie Murray, we should mention Johnny Pearce as well, because that's a great story to get to the Wimbledon doubles
final.
Sensational
result.
They were runner-up over the weekend. We spoke to John on the program here last week.
Good
well
man.
Done to him, and we'll catch up with him throughout the year. So taking on the French, Simon Songa, Gasquet, Mahou. That's not a bad lineup for the French.
It's always
Andy Murray, obviously, the key. And James Ward has got to step up. We spoke to his coach, Darren Tandy.
Yeah, well, he's a chance of winning one of his singles, James Ward. Probably unlikely, but he's an improved player. He's essentially the same ranking as Johnny Millman, who we just spoke to. So
absolutely. Argentina versus Serbia. Interesting tie. We know Novak Djokovic won't be playing for Serbia. Janko Tepsarevic is the interesting story there, because he's hardly played any tennis in the last 2 years. In fact, a 17-month injury, trying to get back when he was top 10. It's going to take a big effort to get back there. But first hit out in the Davis Cup since 2013. So he might just be the little surprise packet. And the Canadians, who are going to take on Belgium, well, gee, they're without Milos Raonic, and Vasek Pospisil has also pulled out. So they're two top singles players, which means that Frankie Dantsevic...
Oh, yes.
Oh, he's been around a long time, Paul.
He has.
Ranked 272 in the world, is going to be leading the charge. It'd be fair to say, they are cactus.
But their doubles is quite good, though, isn't it? Is Nesta playing?
Yes. Yeah, what's he, about 48 now, Daniel Nesta? He's going beautifully. I'm not sure of his teammate, though. Adil Shamsden.
Yeah, look, it's fair enough to say they're going to struggle.
The Belgians have got that one covered, I reckon.
They have, mate.
So that's a big weekend, 7-2. We'll be covering all the Davis Cup. Parting word before I let you go, because I'm going to talk some cricket after the break with Braden Ingram. Are you confident? Whitewash? 5-0?
I think it'll be 4-1, maybe.
Okay.
Because I'm just not confident of our doubles, to be fair. And that's what the pressure will be on, I reckon, for us to go 2-love on the first day. But look, I think we'll win, but anything's possible. I mean, they couldn't have got to 4 out of 5 quarterfinals in this competition without being able to play some good ball.
Yep. Fingers crossed. So, we'll get there. Thanks, Paul.
Good on you, BP.
Nice work. We'll take
it's
a break.
Fun.
We're going to head across to Lords and get the latest ahead of the second test.
Nev's been an important part around this group and around first-class cricket for a long period of time, so that certainly helps. He's played against or with everybody in our squad. He played a tour game. So I guess, obviously, losing Brad for this test match, he's a senior player, and I've played a lot of my cricket with him. But that's the way it goes, and that's the advantage you have of picking a squad. You pick a second wicketkeeper, and if there's a reason he needs to play, he's ready and available.
The voice of Michael Clarke, the Australian captain. We're going to finish off the evening program with a little bit of cricket. Special mention to you, Jackie at Upfield, who enjoys the first serve. And we'll be back with the first serve around the US Open in about 6 weeks' time. But Braden Ingram is our man over in the UK. With thanks to Patch Landscapes for all your landscaping needs. Give Josh a call, 0422 968 476. He's at the home of cricket. What a build-up, Braden. Can Australia rectify the first test? They need to get it going pretty quickly, don't they, when play starts tomorrow night our time?
Yeah, evening, BP. I imagine this is how you feel when you come to Wimbledon. This is really the home of cricket here at Lords. It's a lovely day. The sun's out. Here, a bit of rain this morning, but you're right, that is the question. Michael Clark in his presser today said that we have to turn things around now. We can't let this go on any longer. This is our chance, really, to get back in the game. And, well, given that performance, they're going to have to do it. But we already know a couple of changes. Shane Watson, the Australian team here trying to downplay. Michael Clark said in his press conference that Watson is still a chance to play, although the final 11 hasn't been decided, but we know he's not going to play BP and neither is Brad Haddon. So Peter Neville and Mitch Marsh are going to come into the side. You think that's going to be the only two changes? Because Mitch Starks looks pretty good.
Yeah, he certainly does. Just your impressions of Lords. I mean, I did a tour of Lords many years ago and it was absolutely spectacular. I would love to get there for a test match. What's the first thing that strikes you, Braden, about Lords?
Just the whole setup. I mean, it's just so it's so big and it's completely different to the MCG. And that's a comparison where you've got 100,000 people and things sort of echo and, you know, and in the ground like that, it's just a cacophony of noise. But here it's much more relaxed, but at the same time, you walk into the pavilion, you have a look around there and all the history. And I'll tell you what stands out to me the most. People talk about the slope at this ground, BP. You sit in the UFO-style press box,
yep,
the media centre here at Lords, and the slope is so prominent, you can really notice it, that it does fade away to one side quite a lot. So you understand when you come to the ground,
beautiful,
why it's talked about so often and why it is so hard to keep on it and bowl on as well, yep, and the movement you can get. So I suppose that's just one of those characteristics that you don't get at other grounds.
Great
that
stuff.
Makes this ground so special.
Good on you, mate. Great to catch up with you. Time has beaten us. Enjoy the second test. We'll hear you on evenings throughout the week. Scotty Cooney's in the building. Teo Pellizzeri as well. They've got a big all-night appetite coming up to take you through a big Thursday morning.